Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Cynthia Fogel. I am the oral examiner for this Thai Gatehouse Awards exam. The Thai Center code is IIS Mose Bianchi. The exam date is June 13th, 2022. The exam code is IT1051. The test level is a level 2. The interview session is number 2. The candidate codes and names are as follows: T52079B. Marco Bella. May I have your ID and application?
That's my ID and that's my application.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The other candidate is T52080A, Sabrina. Thank you very much. Okay, before we begin this exam, I would like to again introduce myself. My name is Cynthia, okay? I am your examiner. And I would like you to begin this exam with personal introductions, okay? So you both take the time to tell me something about yourselves, all right? And then you are going to present your investigations. I see you have brought all your information here perfectly. Then you will each present your book or your news story, okay? And then finally, you will have a conversation together about the decision-making task that I will present to you in the envelope that we opened together prior to beginning this recording, okay? Do you have any questions?
No, I don't, thank you.
Okay, are you ready to start?
Yeah.
Very, very good. So, let us begin with Marco Bisana.
Yeah. Okay, I am Marco Bisana. I'm a student in my third year of high school, although I've finished it. I am 16. I will turn 17 on September the 14th. Therefore, I was born on September the 14th, 2005. The next year, I'm going to go to the United States, in particular in Miami, Florida, to do my whole fourth year. I hope I'm going to get a diploma so that I can study in the United States in the colleges. But probably I'm going to go back to complete high school in Italy. Now, here in Italy, I have some friends, not many, I must say, but close ones. And I very much like playing soccer. Now, in my life, I would like to become a politician, maybe. I would like to study economy, maybe macroeconomy, so political economy. And then I would like to become a politician. At the same time, I would like to maybe get into a central bank and a big institute so that I can make experience before getting into, hopefully, getting into higher roles, progressing in my career. Then I'm doing this exam because I would like to test my ability in English. I was told I would have been able to carry out this exam, so I hope I will.
Okay, that's very good. May I ask you one question?
Yes, of course.
You say that you want to study in the United States Miami in particular. Do you have relatives there?
No, I don't. In the fourth year I'm about to do, I'm going to be in a host family. We've already organized this. But then when I go to college, I hope I'm going to go to college in the United States, I'm probably going to have to go away from Miami. This host family is going to host me for 9 months, just for the fourth year of high school, last year of high school. So I'm probably going to have to move away anyway from Miami.
Okay, thank you very much, Marco. Very
welcome.
Interesting. Nice to meet you. Sabrina.
Okay, my name is Sabrina Milana. I am in the fourth year. I finished it. And I was born on November 28th. And I'm 17. I'm going to be 18 in November. And I'm...
You're doing a good job. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
So you were in, you said what grade? I'm sorry, you're...
I finished the fourth year.
The fourth year, okay. And what are you studying?
I'm studying tourism, so languages like English, Spanish, and French, and economy in the tourism sector, and geography, history, and... I like it.
Good.
Until now, and my favorite subjects are English and maths.
Have you ever studied in an English-speaking country before?
In my first year of high school, I went to Ireland for the summer, and I went to school and I went around.
How long did you stay in Ireland?
A month.
Okay. In which city?
Galway.
Okay.
It's a pretty city.
Yes, I know. And did you live with a family or did you stay in a residence?
Yeah, I was with a Irish family.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have kids, so it was a bit difficult to talk to them because I was 14 and they weren't my age. So.
That's true.
It was difficult, but I was there with another Italian girl and a Spanish girl, so I talked to them all the time.
Okay. So was the family friendly, even though were so young?
Not a lot,
okay.
Because we only saw each other at lunch and at dinner, and they wouldn't talk to us, and they will just eat, and then we'd go to our room and talk in there.
Okay, very, very good. Thank you, Sabrina. That's very nice about you. Let's go back now to Marco. Okay, can you please give me your investigation tasks? All right, what is your investigation task about, sorry.
Okay. My investigation is about ethics. It's a subject I really love. In my school, it's a scientific lyceum. We study philosophy, and ethics is the part of philosophy I like the most, I must say. And in this investigation, I mainly research the topics of teleological ethics, in particular utilitarian ethics, and deontological ethics, focusing on its main philosopher, Immanuel Kant. Now, my main source for this investigation was Michael Sandel. He is a philosopher. He teaches at a big U.S. university, I think, and I followed many of his courses, which he held online as well, and that was my main source.
Okay. Could you please tell me the differences between the two ethics that you've investigated?
Of course. These ethics are almost opposed one another, diametrically opposed. Utilitarian ethics is an ethics which judges the righteousness of an action based on the consequences it produces. So an action is good if it maximizes pleasure, and it is bad if it reduces to a minimum possible pain. Now, a deontological ethics is an ethics which judges the righteousness of an action based upon predetermined rules, we could say. So for Kant it was reason and duty which would dictate which action was right and which was wrong. So he would say, for example, killing is wrong. Kant would say killing is wrong, and it is wrong, and that's it. There is no reason, there is no possible reason why killing would be right. A utilitarian would say, well, killing might be right if it serves the greater purpose of providing pleasure. So for example, it's good to kill two people if by killing those two people you save the lives of 10 other people. For Kant, this wouldn't matter. The consequences wouldn't matter. Only the act itself, the righteousness of the act itself, as dictated by reason, by religion, not by Kant, not for Kant, but by religion for other ethics, only duty would dictate the righteousness of an action. For example, a deontological ethics is a Christian, is the Christian ethics.
Okay.
The Ten Commandments are an obvious example.
Okay, very interesting. Now, you said there's, could you please repeat the name of the American professor that you follow?
Michael Sandel.
Michael Sandel, okay. And which of the two ethics does he support?
Yes, he's more of a, he follows more of a deontological ethics, in particular a more advanced form, because after Kant there were many other authors, and he mainly focused on a following author who perfectioned the work of Immanuel Kant, but mainly, yes, he still follows deontological ethic.
Okay. Sabrina, could you please ask him a question?
How did you find out about that professor?
Well, the first time I found out about him, I think I was just looking up informations about ethics, so I was trying to check out websites which could be good sources of information, and I just stumbled upon him. There was a one-hour lecture on YouTube, and I tried to watch him. It was the first lesson this university was offering online for free, and I tried, and I loved it. There were 10 lessons. Watch them all.
Great, good for you. Excellent. Sabrina, may I see your investigation task?
Yeah.
Thank you, dear.
I made this.
Oh, wow.
If you want, I have a Word file.
No, I'd rather see the PowerPoint. Thanks. Go ahead. Excellent. So, what is the topic?
The history of cinema. Okay. And I chose it because I really love cinema and theater. And I play some mm-hmm. roles in theater, and I'm really interested in the whole world of cinema.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about like the invention, the first screening, and the real inventors of cinema, like the Lumière brothers,
mm-hmm.
or Méliès, or even Charlie Chaplin, talks about him too, and about animation cinema, and about Walt Disney.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And of the various types of cinema that you researched, which is your favorite?
Animation, absolutely.
Okay. Well, could you tell us something about that?
Even if it is, it seems childish, I think it's amazing that, for example, screening. Okay.
Yes.
To create it, you have to stop at every image, and record, and the final product is a full animation, even though there was nothing moving. And I think it's fascinating how it's made. And
okay, take a deep breath. You're doing a really, really, really good job. Thank you. Can I ask you another question?
Yeah.
Okay. Did Walt Disney begin with animated films?
Yeah, he was one of the first to make animation cinema, like Mickey Mouse and Minnie and Donald Duck. In fact, in 1928, he made the first animation about Mickey Mouse, and it had a lot of sound effects and music and a lot of action.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell me what the name of an animated movie that I should watch?
For example, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. It's really famous.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes they say it's for children.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think that everything is for children, because every film teaches a lesson to every type of person at every age.
Okay, very, very good. Would you please ask her a question, Marco?
Yes, absolutely. Is there a movie which made the history of the filming industry? Is there a movie which you love particularly?
One of my favorite movies, I don't, not everybody knows it, is Ready Player One.
Okay.
It's not like really acted, it's a lot made by computer, even though they have actors and real places, but some places are made up by computer, but it is so well made that you don't even notice, like they're made by computer, and it has a lot of action, sound effects, and it's amazing how it's made, and the story, it's not boring or slow, not even really fast, so you understand everything, and I think it's a great movie.
Very good, thank you. Thank you very much. Marco, could you please kindly show me your book?
The book?
Yes.
Do you want the...
Yes.
The copies?
Thank you. Okay, what is the title of your book?
The book is Animal Farm.
And the name is, what is the author?
George Orwell.
Okay. Why did you choose this book?
I chose this book because I had already read it more than once, and I really loved it for its meaning, for its deeper meaning.
Mm-hmm.
When you read it and you don't know it has an allegorical meaning, a deeper significance, you really do not understand the book completely, because this book may appear to be maybe a bit childish, but when you understand the deeper meaning of this book, it's a really important book, and it talks about one of the most important events which happened in the 20th century, the Russian Revolution. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is the author American, Russian? Do you know?
Well, the author should be English.
Mm-hmm.
British.
Okay. And is his point of view expressed about the story of the book as an author, do you think?
Well, it's implicitly, yes. It's not explicitly told, his point of view, but he expresses it very subtly, because he explains how the revolution goes. As I said, it's about the Russian Revolution, so he explains how the revolution goes. It starts off well, even in its results and in its intentions, but then it moves slowly but steadily towards despotism and towards a sort of despotism, dictatorship, and a ruling caste, and that's the problem. This revolution was carried out with the goal of completely eliminating classes, eliminating disparities, but in the end it produced even greater disparities, and that's particularly well said, well explained in the end of the book.
And could you please tell me, how does the title of the book associate to the storyline?
Yes, Animal Farm is the name of the farm takes after the revolution. So this book is about a farm which initially was ran normally by a normal farmer who was treating his animals very bad, very poorly, and that farmer is the Tsar in the allegory. It's the Emperor of Russia. The animals gather and they decide to just throw him down the throne, the metaphorical throne. And they managed to kick him out, as he was not a good farmer at all. And the revolution seems to be going well. That's, of course, it talks about when the Tsar was taken out by the Bolsheviks. And then the farm, after being called Manor Farm, it used to be called Manor Farm, a normal name. Then they give this farm a new name. It's Animal Farm. It's the farm of the animals.
Excellent. Sabrina, can you ask him a question about his book?
Would you suggest this book to someone who wants to have a light read?
Well, I don't think I would, to be honest. Because if you take this book for a light read, as I said, you could completely misunderstand the meaning, because in a light read you don't, that's my view of course, in a light read you don't really want to focus on a deeper meaning, on a deeper understanding of each and every character's representation in reality, in the history. In a light read perhaps you would just want to relax and not think about all of this.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, Sabrina, can I see your new story, please?
Okay.
Thank you very much.
It's a summary.
Okay. All right. What is the title of your new story?
The title is about putting breathalyzers in cars in 2022.
Okay. Where did you find your article?
On the internet. It's in the back.
Okay, sorry, I didn't see that. Okay, putting breathalyzers in automobiles. Okay, so please tell us something about this.
Okay, they want to put breathalyzers in cars because to prevent drunk people to drive because the created two systems, two devices. The first one is you have to blow in the direction of the device, and it can scan the alcohol in your blood, and if it is too high, the car doesn't start. They want to
Okay. Can I ask you? No, you're doing fine. You're just a bit nervous. It's okay. You shouldn't be. You're doing, speaking very, very lovely English. Okay? Now, breathalyzers. Why did you choose this specific news story?
Because I was searching up for news and I found this one, and after I thought it was interesting and it was a good choice because in the USA, over 10,000 people die from this problem.
Okay. And did you, other than this fact, did you learn something else interesting about drinking and driving? Or Did you, what was it, some other thing that you learned reading this news story? Okay, just that, fine, okay. And is drinking and driving a problem in Italy?
Yeah, I think it's a problem all over the world. And in Italy too, because a lot of young people who are maybe 18 or 19 go out to drink, and nobody wants to be the one who doesn't drink, so everybody drinks, and going home, they risk having accidents from this problem. And so yeah, I think it's a problem all over the world, not only in Italy or USA or just some states.
Excellent, excellent. Could you ask her a question, please?
Do you think it's right to put fertilizers in cars?
I think it's a great idea because it can stop deaths that are anticipated. And it doesn't. I think someone could think it stops your liberty, but I don't think, because your liberty stops when someone else's liberty starts. So if you drive while you're drunk, you risk not only your life, but someone else.
Excellent. Very, very, very good. Excellent. Let's move on to the very last part of this exam. Okay. This should be an interesting topic for the two of you. Looking after the environment. Okay? Now, I would like for Marco to please describe what you see in picture A and in picture D. A and D.
Okay. So, in picture A, I see a few symbols. And that's probably a manifest, I'd say, because there is a slogan, Car-Free Day, probably written on a wall, I'd say. It seems to be written using a sticker on a wall, perhaps making publicity to this event, to this Car-Free Day. And what I see in the top side of the picture is an automobile, a barred automobile, a person walking, and a bicycle. So I'd say the meaning is pretty clear. They want to say that, okay, you can walk, you can cycle, but in this day, the car is banned, it's barred. In picture D, I see many, many beans, and each of these beans has a name on it, has a different color, and that's, of course, it talks about recycling. So in each of these beans you should put what it says on it, so glass, metal, plastic, paper, and it should be done so that these materials can be better disposed of.
Okay.
And reused.
Excellent. Can you please explain what you see in picture B and in picture C?
In picture B, I see people clean up a street. I think it's an activity to support the fact of not throwing trash on the ground and to not leave it here. And it helps because sometimes even animals can go around and eat what they find on the ground, and it helps the environment by recycling.
Okay, and what do you see in picture C?
They are planting a tree, and it helps the environment because it creates air and
good.
It helps a lot of animals who live on trees because they are cutting down trees all over the world, and it doesn't help because trees create the air we breathe and help us.
Okay.
And live.
Good. All right. Now I'm going to ask a question to the two of you.
Okay.
About the pictures you just described. I am going to only listen, and now you will have a conversation together about this question. Okay? So, what can governments do to help the environment? Please.
Well, I'd say governments can do a lot to help the environment. First of all, they can shape the energy policy of a country. So, the energy policy is basically left to the government to decide. So, they could phase out fossil fuels like coal and use gas instead, or if gas is a problem, because now also gas is a problem and it's a problem for geopolitical reasons now, but it's also a problem for the environment, even though less than coal. They can phase out gas as well, thermal stations as well, to use renewable energies such as solar, wind power, and also nuclear, if you think that's a good alternative. Many think it's not, but it might be to help the environment. Also, there is this carbon tax many countries are thinking of applying, and carbon shares. So each company, given its dimensions and all, is given a carbon share. They can emit up until this amount of carbon emissions, of CO2, and then they have to pay taxes, okay? Or they have to buy carbon shares from other companies. So they have to still spend money if they want to throw off CO2.
I think you have a great point. And I think maybe the government should do policies like to reduce the usage of cars and increase the usage of buses or planes or trains, because they travel by group, and traveling by group you reduce the amount of cars in the street and the amount of pollution produced by cars. And even the picture says make some car-free days and if you use car you can if you use car it is like
okay. That's very, very good. Okay, fine. Very good. We're going to stop this exam now. All right? Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.